Lecture 9, Risk Aversion, Lotteries with Monetary Prices. We proceed to a discussion of a decision-maker satisfying a V and M assumptions, where the space of prices Z is a set of real numbers, and A in Z is interpreted as receiving $8. Note that in the previous lecture, we assumed that the set Z is finite. Here, in contrast, we apply the expected utility approach to a set that is infinite. For simplicity, we'll still consider only lotteries with finite support. In other words, in this lecture, a lottery P is a real function on Z, such that PZ greater than 0 for all Z, and there is a finite set Y, the support, such that the sum of PZ over Z in the support is 1. It's easy to extend the axiomatization presented in Lecture 8 for this case. We'll make special assumptions that fit the interpretation of the members of Z as sums of money. Recall that a square bracket X denotes the lottery that yields a price X with certainty. We will say that preferences satisfying monotonicity if A greater than B implies that the certain A is strictly better than the strictly B. The certain B. From here on, we focus the discussion on preference relations over the space of lotteries for which there is a continuous function U, such that the preference relation over lotteries is represented by the function EU of P, namely the sum of PZ U of Z. The function EU assigns to the lottery P the expectation of the random variable that receives the value U of X with probability P of X. The following argument, called the St. Petersburg paradox, is sometimes presented as justification for assuming that V and M utility functions are bounded. Assume that the decision maker has an unbounded V and M utility function U. Consider playing the following trick on him. Assume he possesses X0. Offer him a lottery that will reduce his wealth to 0 with probability 1 half and will increase his wealth to X1 with probability 1 half so that U of X0 is strictly less than the average between U0 and UX1. By the unboundedness of U, there exists an X1 such that. If he loses, you are happy. If he is lucky, a moment before you give him X1, offer him a lottery that will give him X2 with probability 1 half and 0 otherwise, where X2 is such that the average between U0 and UX2 is strictly above UX1, and so on. Our poor decision maker will find himself with wealth 0 with probability 1. First order stochastic domination. We say that P first order stochastic dominates Q, written as P D1Q, if P is at least as good as Q for any preferences on LZ, satisfying V and M assumptions as well as monotonicity in money. That is, P D1Q if EU of P greater equal E of U of Q for all increasing U. This is the simplest example of questions of the type, given a set of preference relations on LZ, for what pairs P of Q, P and Q and LZ, is P is at least as good as Q for all preferences in the set. In the problem set, you will discuss another example of this kind of question. Obviously, PD1Q, if the entire support of P is to the right of the entire support of Q. But we are concerned with a more interesting condition in a pair of lotteries P and Q, one that will be not only sufficient for also but also necessary for P to first order stochastically dominate Q. For any lottery P and the number X, define GPX as the probability that the lottery P yields a price at least as high as X, namely the sum of PZ over all Z greater or equal of X. Denote by FPX, the cumulative distribution function of P, that is, FP of X is equal to the sum of PZ for all Z less equal X. Claim, PD1Q, if and only if for all X, GPX greater or equal GQX. Alternatively, PD1Q, if and only if for all X, FPX less equal FQX. Proof. Let X0 less X1 less X2 less XK be the prices in the union of the supports of the lotteries P and Q. First note the following alternative expression for EUP. EUP, which is usually written as the sum of PXK U of XK, can be written as UX0 plus the sum of GPXK times the difference between uxk and uxk minus 1. Now, if gpxk greater equal gqxk for all k, then for all increasing u, we get eup, which is, as explained before, ux0 plus the sum of gpxk times u of xk minus u of xk minus 1, greater equal u of x0 plus the sum of gqxk times uxk minus uxk minus 1, which is equal to e of uq. Conversely, if there exists k star for which gpxk star is strictly less than gqxk star, then we can find an increasing function u so that eup less than uxq by setting the difference between uxk star minus uxk minus 1 to be very large and the other increments to be very small. Risk aversion. We say that preferences is risk averse if for any lottery P, the expectation of P uncertainty is at least as good as the lottery P. We'll see now that for a decision maker with preferences obeying the VNM axioms, risk aversion is closely related to the concavity of the VNM utility function representing the preferences. First, recall some basic properties of concave functions. If you are not familiar with these properties, this will be an excellent opportunity for you to prove them yourself. Number one, an increasing and concave function must be continuous, but not necessarily differentiable. Two, the Jensen inequality. If u is concave, then for any finite sequence alpha k of positive numbers that sum up to 1, u of the sum of alpha k xk, k from 1 to capital K, is greater or equal of the average of the u's, namely the sum of alpha k uxk. Three, the three strings lemma. For any a less than b less than c, we have the slope uc minus ub divided by c minus b less equal uc minus ua divided by c minus a less equal ub minus ua divided by b minus a. Four, if u is twice differentiable, then for any a less than c, the derivative of u at a is greater or equal to the derivative of u at c, and thus the second derivative of x is a of u at any point x is less equal to 0. Claim, let preferences be defined on Lz represented by the VNM utility function u. The preference relation is risk averse if and only if u is concave. Proof, assume that u is concave. By the Jensen inequality for any lottery P, u of the expectation of P is greater or equal to the expectation of u of P, and thus the certainty EP is at least as good as P. That redirection assumes that preferences is risk averse and that u represents preferences. For all alpha between 0 and 1 and for all x and y in z, we have by risk aversion that the alpha x plus 1 minus alpha y by certainty is at least as good as the lottery, which gives us probability alpha x and with probability 1 minus alpha y. And thus, u of alpha x plus 1 minus alpha y greater or equal alpha u of x plus 1 minus alpha u of y, that is, u is concave. Certainty equivalence and the risk premium. Let EP be the expectation of the lottery P, that is, EP equal to sigma PZZ over all Z's. Given a preference relation over the space LZ, the certainty equivalence of the lottery P, denoted by CEP, is a price satisfying that CEP by certainty is indifferent to P. Verify that the existence of CEP is guaranteed by assuming that the preferences is monotonic in the sense that if P first order stochastic dominates Q, then P is strictly better than Q, and continuous in the sense that the set of the prices which are strictly better than P and the sets of the prices that are strictly inferior to P are both open. The risk premium of P is the difference between expectation of P and the certainty equivalence of P denoted by R of P. By definition, the preferences are risk averse, the preferences are risk averse if and only if Rp greater equal 0 for all p.
The more risk averse relation. We wish to formalize the statement one decision maker is more risk averse than another. To understand the logic of the following definition, let us start with an analogous phrase. A is more war averse than B. One possible meaning of this phrase is that whenever A is ready to go to war, B is as well. Another possible meaning is that when facing the threat of war, A is ready to agree to a less attractive compromise than B is. Note that the assumption that A and B share the same concept of war and peace is implicit in these interpretations. The following two conditions are analogous to these two interpretations. 1. The preference relation, preference 1, is more risk-averse than preference 2 if, for any lottery P and degenerate lottery C, P is at least as good as C by preference 1 implies that P is at least as good as C by preference 2. In case the preferences are monotonic, we have a second definition. The preference relation 1 is more risk-averse than preference relation 2 if C1P less equal C2P for all P. In case the preferences satisfy VNM assumptions, we have a third definition. Let U1 and U2 be VNM utility functions representing preference 1 and preference 2, respectively. The preference relation preference 1 is more risk-averse than preference 2 if the function phi defined by U1T equal to phi of U2T is concave. Note that definition 1 is meaningful in any space of prices, not only those in which consequences are numerical, and for a general set of preferences, and not only those satisfying VNM assumptions. Claim. If both preference 1 and preference 2 are preference relations on LZ, represented by increasing and continuous VNM utility functions, then the three definitions are equivalent. Proof. If 2, then 1. Assume 2. If P is at least as good as C by preference 1, then by transitivity, C1P is at least as good as 1, then the degenerate lottery C. By monotonicity of preference 1, we have that C1P greater equal C, which implies also that C2P greater equal C, and by transitivity of preference 2, P is at least as good as C. If 3, then 2, by definition, EUIP equal to UI of the certainty equivalent I of P. Thus, CIP equal to UI minus 1 of the expected utility of UIP. If phi equal to U1 composition of U2 minus 1 is concave, then by the Jensen inequality, U1 of C2P equal to U1 of U2 inverse of the expectation of U2 equal to phi of sum of px u2x over all x greater equal the sum of px phi of u2x equal to the sum of px u1x equal to the expectation of u1p equal to u1 of the certainty equivalent 1 of p. Since u1 is increasing, c2p greater equal to c1p. Finally, if 1, then 3. Consider three numbers, U2X less than U2Y less than U2Z in the range of U2, and let lambda satisfy that U2Y is equal to lambda of U2X plus 1 minus lambda of U2Z. Let us prove that U1Y greater equal the lambda U1X plus 1 minus lambda U1Z. If that's not correct, namely U1Y is strictly less than lambda U1X plus 1 minus lambda U1Z, then for some mu greater than lambda, we have both U1Y strictly less than the mu U1X plus 1 minus U1Z, and U2Y is strictly greater than U2X plus 1 minus mu U2Z. That is, y is strictly inferior to the lottery mu x plus 1 minus mu z, and by preference 1, and by preference 2, Y is strictly better than this lottery, which contradicts 1. Thus, Y is at least as good as by preference 1 than lambda X plus 1 minus lambda Z, and therefore U1Y greater equal to lambda U1X plus 1 minus lambda U1Z, that is, phi of U2Y is greater equal to lambda of phi of U2X plus 1 minus lambda phi of U2Z, thus phi is concave. The coefficient of absolute risk aversion. The following is another definition of the relation more risk averse, applied to the case in which V and M utility functions are twice differentiable. Let U1 and U2 be twice differentiable V and M utility functions representing preferences 1 and 2, respectively. The preference relation preference 1 is more risk averse than preference 2 if R1x greater equal R2x for all x, where Rix is the minus the ratio between the second derivative of ui and the first derivative of ui at the point x. The number Rx, which is this ratio, is called the coefficient of absolute risk aversion of u at x. Let me repeat, Rx equal to minus the second derivative of u divided by first derivative of u at x. We'll see that a higher coefficient of absolute risk aversion means a more risk averse decision maker. To see that 3 and 4 are equivalent, note the following chain of equivalence. Definition 3 means that the U1 composition of U, the inverse of U2 is concave. This is satisfied if and only if the function, the first derivative of U1 composition of U2 minus 1 is non-increasing in T. This is true if and only if the first derivative of U1 at the point U2 minus 1 T times the derivative of U2 minus 1, which is 1 divided by U2 prime at the point U2 minus 1 T, is non-increasing in T. This is true if and only if the ratio between the first derivatives of U1 and U2 at x is increasing in x. This is because U2 minus 1 at t is increasing in t as well. Now, the ratio between the first derivatives is non-increasing if and only if the logarithm of this ratio, which is the log of U1 minus the log of the first derivative of U1 minus the log of the first derivative of U2, is non-increasing in x. If and only if the derivative of this is non-positive, if and only if exactly R2x minus R1x less equal x, which is exactly what the fourth definition means. For a better understanding of the coefficient of absolute risk aversion, it is useful to look at the preferences on the restricted domain of lotteries of the type X1, X2, which is the lotteries which with probability P gets the prize X1 and with probability 1 minus P gets the prize X2, where the probability P is fixed. Denote by U a continuously differentiable V and M utility function that represents a risk-averse preference. Let X2 equal to Psi X1 be the function describing the indifference curve through some point TT. Psi T equal, of course, to T. It follows from risk aversion that all lotteries with a expectation T, that is, all lotteries on the line PX1 plus 1 minus PX2 equal T, are above the indifference curve through TT. Sorry, are not above the indifference curve through TT. Thus, the first derivative of Psi at the point T is minus P divided by 1 minus P. But the definition of U as a V and M utility function representing the preferences over the space of lotteries, we have that P U of X1 plus 1 minus P U of Psi of X1 equal to U of T. Taking derivative with respect to X1, we obtain P U tag U prime at X1 plus 1 minus P U prime at Psi X1 times Psi at the psi prime at the point x1 is 0. Taking derivative with respect to x1, once again, we obtain p, second derivative of u at x1, plus 1 minus p, second derivative of u at psi x1, times psi prime x1 square, equal plus 1 minus p, the first derivative of u at psi x1, times the second derivative of psi at x1, is equal to 0. Insert x1 equal t, we obtain p, second derivative of u at t, plus second derivative of u of t times p squared divided by 1 minus p, plus 1 minus p, first derivative of u at t, times psi, second derivative of psi at t is 0, which means that the second derivative of psi at the point t is is exactly the rt, the coefficient at the point t, times p divided by 1 minus p squared. Note that on this restricted space of lotteries, preference 1 is more risk-averse than preference 2 in the sense of definition 1, if and only if the indifference curve of preference 1 through tt, denoted by psi 1, is never below the indifference curve of preference 2 through tt, denoted by psi 2, combined with that the first derivative of psi 1 and psi 2 at the point t are equal to p divided by 1 minus p, we obtain that psi 1 second derivative at t greater or equal to the second derivative of psi 2 at t, and thus r2t less equal to r1t for all t. The doctrine of consequentialism, I cannot pronounce this word, conduct the following thought experiment. You have $2,000 in your bank account. You have to choose between a sure loss of 500 and a lottery in which you lose 1,000 with probability 1 half and 0 with probability 1 half. A loss of 0 with probability 1 half. What is your choice? Now assume you have $1,000 in your account and that you have to choose between a certain gain of 500 and a lottery in which you win 1,000 with probability 0.5 and win 0 with probability 0.5. What is your choice now? Of Kalman and Tversky 79 subjects, in the first case 69% preferred the lottery to the certain loss, while in the second case 84% preferred the certain gain of 500 to the lottery. These results indicate that about half of the population exhibit a preference for 2 over 1 and 3 over 4. Such a preference does not conflict with expected utility theory if we interpret a price to reflect a monetary change. However, if we assume that the decision maker takes the final wealth levels to be his prices, we have a problem. In terms of final wealth levels, both choice problems are between a certain 1,500 and the lottery that yields with equal probabilities $2,000 and $1,000. Incidentally, in the results from my site, using somewhat different framing of the question, only 34% of the subject chose 2 over 1. When the dollars were replaced with lives, the proportion of subjects who chose the lottery increased to 54%. Nevertheless, in the economic literature, it is usually assumed that the decision maker's preferences over wealth changes are induced from his preferences with regard to final wealth levels. Formally, when starting with levels, when wealth W, denoted by preference W, the decision maker's preferences over lotteries in which the prices are interpreted as changes in wealth, by the doctrine of consequentialism, all relations, preference W, are derived from the same preference relation defined over the final wealth levels. By P, the lottery P, is preferred W at the wealth W is preferred to Q, even only if W plus P is at least as good as W plus Q, where W plus P is the lottery that awards a prize W plus X with probability PX. If the preferences are represented by a VNM utility function U, this doctrine implies that for all W, the function VW at X equal to U of W plus X is a VNM utility function representing the preferences at the wealth level W. invariance to wealth. We say that the preference relation exhibits invariance to wealth, in the literature it's often called constant absolute risk aversion, if the induced preference relation, preference W, defined by W plus L1, is at least as good as W plus L2, is true or false independent of W. We will see that if U is a continuous VNM utility function representing preferences which exhibit risk aversion and invariance to wealth, then U must be exponential or linear. Let us first define confine ourselves to the delta grid price space Z equal to the set of all X which are N delta for some integer N. This domain has a special meaning when we take delta to be the smallest indivisible unit of money. But continuity of U for any wealth level X, there is a number Q such that X is indifferent to the lottery, which gives you its probability 1 minus Q X minus delta and with probability Q X plus delta. By invariance to wealth, Q is independent of X, thus we have U of X plus delta minus U X equal to y minus q divided by q ux minus ux minus delta for all x. This means that the increments in the function u when u is increased by delta constitute a geometric sequence with a factor of y minus q divided by q, where q might depend on delta. Using the formula for the sum of the geometric sequence, we conclude that the function u defined on the delta grid must equal to a minus b times 1 minus q divided by q to the power x divided by delta, or the linear function a plus b times x divided by delta for some a and some b. Note that the comparisons of the lottery 0 by sure with the simple lotteries involving a gain and loss of delta are sufficient to characterize a unique preference relation that is consistent with 1. The doctrine of consequentialism, and 2. The assumption that the preference regarding lotteries over changes in wealth are independent of the initial wealth. And 3. The expected utility assumptions regarding the space of lotteries in which the prices are the final wealth levels. Many researchers have tried to reveal the decision makers' preferences experimentally under these assumptions, using the question, what is the probability Q that will make you indifferent between a gain of delta dollars and probability Q with probability Q and the loss of delta dollars with probability Y minus Q? The results vary. Moreover, asking individuals different questions of this type is likely to lead to inconsistent answers. And let us now turn to the case of Z equal to the reals and look at the preferences over the restricted space of all lotteries of the type X1, X2 with probability P X1 with probability 1 minus P X2 for some arbitrary fixed probability P. We denote the indifference curve through TT by X2 equal to X2 equal to Ct of X1. Thus, the certain lottery T is indifferent to Px1 plus 1 minus P Ct of X1. Since preferences exhibits constant absolute risk aversion, it must be that the 0 is indifferent to P times to the lottery which gets with probability P X1 minus T and with probability Y minus P the lottery the price pt of x1 minus t, and thus ψ0 of x1 minus t is equal to ψt x1 minus t, or ψt x1 equal to ψ0 x1 minus t plus t. In other words, the indifference curve through tt is the indifference curve through 0 0 shifted in the direction of tt. Assuming that the function u is indifferentiable, we derive that the second derivative of psi at the point psi t at the point t is equal to the second derivative of psi 0 at the point 0. We have already seen that the second derivative of t at t is minus p divided by 1 minus p square times the ratio between the second derivative and the first derivative of ui, and thus there exists a constant alpha such that minus the second derivative of u divided by first derivative of u is equal to alpha for all t.
This implies that the logarithm of the first derivative of u is equal to or the derivative of the second of the derivative of the logarithm of the first derivative of u is equal to minus alpha for all t. In other words, the logarithm of the first derivative of u is equal to minus alpha t plus beta for some beta. It follows that the first derivative of u is equal to minus alpha t plus beta. If alpha equal to 0, the function u t must be linear, implying risk aversion and neutrality. If alpha is not 0, it must be that u of t equal to c times e to the power minus alpha t plus d for some c and d. To conclude, if u is a VNM continuous utility function representing preferences that are monotonic and exhibit both risk aversion and invariance to Wells, then u is either the function t or a function minus e to the power minus alpha t, or to be more precise, u is an affine transformation of those functions. Critique of the doctrine of consequentialism. The note by 1 half minus d plus 1 f plus g, the lottery in which there is an equal probability of gaining g dollars and losing d dollars. Consider a risk-averse decision maker who likes the money, obeys expected utility theory, and adheres to the doctrine of consequentialism. Rabin 2000 noted that if such a decision maker turns down the lottery L equal to 1 f minus 10 and with probability 1 f plus 11 at any Wells level between 0 and 5,000, quite a plausible assumption, then at the Wells level 4,000, he must reject the lottery, which give him with probability 1/2, minus 100 and plus $71,000. Quite a ridiculous conclusion. The intuition for this observation is quite simple. Since L is rejected at W plus 10, we have that U of W plus 10 is greater or equal U plus W plus 21 plus U divided U of W divided by 2. Therefore, U W plus 10 minus U of W is greater or equal U of W plus 21 minus U of 10, U of W plus 10. Or 10 divided by 11 times the difference between U of W plus 10 and U W divided by 10 greater or equal than the ratio between u w plus 21 minus u of w plus 10 and the number 11. By the continuity of u, the right hand side of this equation is at least as high as the marginal utility of w plus 21, whereas the left right side is at most 10 divided by 11 times the marginal utility at w. Thus, the marginal utility at w plus 21 is at most 10 divided by 11 the marginal utility of w at w. Thus, the sequence of marginal utilities within the domain of Wells levels in which L is rejected falls at least in a geometric rate. This implies that for the lottery 1 half minus d plus 1 minus half plus g to be accepted even for relatively low d, one would need a huge g. What conclusion should we draw from the observation? In my opinion, in contrast to what some scholars claim, this is not a refutation of expected utility theory. Rabin's argument relies on the doctrine of consequentialism, which is not a part of expected utility theory. Expected utility theory is invariant to the interpretation of the prices. Independently of the theory of decision-making under uncertainty that we use, the set of prices should be the set of consequences in the mind of the decision-maker. Thus, it's equally reasonable to assume the consequences are Wells changes or final Wells levels. I treat Rabin's argument as further evidence of the empirically problematic nature of the doctrine of consequentialism, according to which the decision maker makes all decisions having in mind a preference relation over the same set of final consequences. It also demonstrates how carefully we should tread when trying to estimate real-life agents' utility functions. The practice of estimating an economic agent's risk aversion parameters for small lotteries might lead to misleading conclusions if such estimates are used to characterize the decision-maker's preferences regarding lotteries over large sums.